Business Video Marketing Strategies. Hello, I'm David Cummings, and we're all about business marketing and the strategies which can help promote your business in the right direction. Today's guest is a very special guest, and he's actually over in Dubai, and his name is John Lincoln, and he is the author of Connect the Dots, and he's also a vice president of a large corporation, which is SVP Business Marketing, currently based in the United Arab Emirates. And he has certainly been around the business world. He knows how to start a business and how to continue. And he's also had his share of ups and downs with business as well. Welcome, John.
Thank you very much, David, for having me here today. It's my pleasure.
I really appreciate you joining us. I found your details very intriguing, and I was certainly wanting to interview for a while now, especially about your book, which is Connect the Dots. And it certainly is something which I believe our listeners can certainly benefit from. Firstly, can I ask you how you started out as an entrepreneur and a business leader?
Sure. I've been very fortunate. I was born and brought up in Malaysia, and I moved to the U.S. about 25 years ago, and I started my career in telecom. So I'm a telecommunications professional, having worked in many different countries on management and senior leadership roles. Late 1990s, I saw an opportunity to start a business in Japan, where I was based due to one of my assignments. And, I started a business, an e-learning business, and it failed, and I learned many things from it. And along the way, I also had a chance to advise many small and medium businesses, both formally and informally. And I've always noticed that most small businesses are more opportunistic than strategic. I learned both from the corporate world and from observing small and medium businesses across developed economies, developing and emerging economies in many markets. So I thought I had something new to say.
Right.
And that's why I wrote the book.
Yeah, okay. You mentioned about the entrepreneurship in Japan, and I've since found out that you opened a company and it didn't do too well. Can you talk about that, please?
Sure. When I was based in Japan, I realized that I sort of observed that many Japanese really want to learn how to speak English, and of course that was the start of the internet boom those days. And I thought that I could offer them English language lessons using the internet as a key enabler. The reason being, many Japanese, as you might already be aware, they commute between 1 to 1.5 hours away from home to work and back. And most of them do go to an English language school right after work, late in the evenings or late night. And they pay about $60 an hour. Then I thought there's an opportunity to offer them English language lessons, conversational English language lessons over the internet.
Yes.
And that's the reason why I started this business. And of course, you can't offer language lessons truly on the internet. So I had a hybrid model where I actually had a call center of teachers, American teachers, sitting there and pushing lessons, and students can call in and subscribe to lessons and different sorts of coaching. And that was my business model at that time. And the business didn't take off because I had grossly underestimated one key factor, that internet at that time was dependent mainly on the phone lines. And the phone lines in Japan at that time didn't have flat rate service. It was a measured rate service. And so it didn't take off as much as I expected. And this is the early phase of internet. And then, of course, I had closed the business eventually. And the second guy who followed after me, I guess it's a $1 billion business today. And I guess in case the early bird did not get the worm, but the second mouse got the cheese, if you may.
Yes. What was the primary reason why it failed? Is it because the market research wasn't done properly, or the tools to be used was not researched?
No, not really. There were multiple reasons, of course. One of the key reasons was that I probably was a bit too early in my timing, because internet service was dependent on the phone line, which was still a measured rate service in Japan. It was not flat rate like in many developed economies. Of course, today it's a flat rate service, yeah. And internet has a fixed access charge. That is one of the reasons. The second reason is that I probably should not have tried to do a consumer model. Rather, I should have gone on to a B2B model, a business-to-business model, whereby instead of developing all 150 lessons in one go, I probably should have done about 5 or 10 lessons, hired a couple of account managers, and try and sell it to the corporations,
right.
And then slowly build up. So I know I had a very ambitious plan at that time, and then I also started a call center with teachers in and stuff like that, which yeah. was a little too early for its time at that time.
Okay, but I must admit, though, you'd be pretty courageous by standing out and actually jumping in and trying something brand new in a different country like that. That's very open thinking.
Yeah, it's actually across two countries. You know, the development was done in the States, and the call center with the teachers was launched in Osaka in Japan. Of course, I had some Japanese partners. I would have never attempted to do it myself.
Right.
Who were in the educational field. So yeah, that's why I took it. Yeah, when it's been on hindsight, you know, as it really was. Probably an absurd and stupid idea.
Well, everyone's got 20/20 vision in hindsight, don't they?
Yes, hindsight is 20/20, yes.
I suppose what I'm getting at is, because you stepped out and tried something new, does your book really explain or help connect the dots for young entrepreneurs today to actually help them move forward and try something different like this, if they've got great big ideas?
Yes, I'm hopeful it will do that. One of the reasons is that I specifically, in my first chapter, introduced the book as to why I'm writing this book, and on my last chapter, it's a very personal story, you know, the dots that I did not connect, you know.
Oh, okay.
But more than that, the book actually tries to attempt to address topics that are not normally covered in business books or for small and medium business advice books, for example. In my first chapter, you know, I titled it as "Before You Take the Bull by the Horns, Know Your Exit."
Yes.
Or, for example, you know, how do you entice and tempt your customers to sin? Which means before you design your proposition, you know,
yes.
there are ways you can think. You know, you can use the 7 cardinal sins to design your proposition.
Yes.
Or, for example, you know, how do you engage in a price war? Most small and medium businesses think that engaging in a price war means just matching prices or cutting down your prices, which is absolutely not sustainable for small and medium businesses.
Yeah.
And for example, there's another topic that I have on, you know, how do you market to women and why marketing to women is pretty critical, you know. There are topics like this that I address which are not normally addressed in for large companies, because large companies can afford a battery of consultants and, you know, highly paid professionals.
Yes.
So most small businesses don't have this sort of view. You know, they might see an opportunity and try and make the best out of it. So that's why I wrote this book.
It really sounds like you're trying to get into the heads of and the mindset of the target customer as well.
Yes, indeed. In fact, you know, let's take a simple business, you know, like a retail outfit, or if you take a simple business like a restaurant, you know, these are very simple. Not simple to run. I mean, it, you know, everybody can understand that it's a straightforward business.
Yeah.
But it is really not that straightforward. You know, the simple fact of when hiring people, you know, for hiring the manager, most people think that the manager is just to run the operations and so forth. But I do believe that, you know, beyond the basic skills of some people that are required for any function, there's a thing known as emotional intelligence is required.
Yeah.
If you don't have the emotional intelligence, you can't connect with people, you know, and you can't manage and motivate your team. And then vicious cycle sets in. The team is not motivated, customers are unhappy.
Yeah.
Or there's another chapter on why capacity, you know, don't look at averages. You know, when you build up capacity, many people just say, okay, I just need 2 people. Lo and behold, come lunchtime, you can't even serve the customers, you know.
Yes.
So it's just very commonsensical stuff. That is advised in a very structured manner.
I think that's probably the difference then. If you have structured it well in the book to explain the differences between success, mediocre, and absolute failure, well then obviously you're certainly pushing the right barrow in that right regard.
Yeah, you know, I'm trying to say in my book is basically, you know, each aspect has to be really thought through. You know, for example, I spoke about hiring. You know, most people hire, you know, people, you know, they might require some basic qualifications, or they might look for experience and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But there are ways you can interview the person to check the emotional intelligence of a person, because especially for small, you know, I have a belief that, you know, in any company, small or large, a very few number of people make the biggest difference. You know, the 80-20 rule, you know, 20% of the people really make the 80% of the incremental contribution or value generation in a business. And imagine a small business is much more magnified. So you have to hire people with very high emotional intelligence. And what do I mean by that? You know, you need a person who is practical, you know, who is not whimsical, or, you know, or is not too pessimistic or not too optimistic. You need, you're not a pie-in-the-sky sort of person. You need somebody who's assertive, but assertive in a positive way. You need somebody who's deliberate and not whimsical, you know. You need flexibility, because business is a whiteboard environment and things change, you know. So flexibility is key. You need somebody who has a high, keen awareness of their own emotional reaction to stuff, you know, rather than overreacting, underreacting, or in the right temperament is required. Last but not least, you need somebody with the right level of empathy, you know, because after all, we are humans. We need to be able to put yourself in somebody else's shoes and connect with people as humans, you know. So these are some attributes that small businesses don't think about. Of course, some of the very charismatic businessmen, they know it, you know, and they do a wonderful business doing that. But when you hire people too, there are ways to look for that, you know.
Yes, absolutely. I think one of the major things that you're one of the key aspects you're talking about here is relationships with people. And I've noticed that in a lot of successful businesses, and certainly what you're saying here, that if you can't connect with people, then you're really just up there as a front person.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one aspect from your employee side. Well, for example, if you're marketing to women, for example, you know, many people mistakenly think that women, you know, you just paint it pink all over and it'll become, you know, it'll make it it's a marketing strategy for women.
Yeah.
But it's not true at all, you know, if you think there has to be the context. And, you know, women don't like, you know, generally speaking, they have a keen sense, an acute awareness of their sensory awareness is much more than men, you know. So loud music does not go well with them. The cleanliness, of course, everybody likes the place to be clean, but cleanliness matters more to women, you know.
Yeah.
But women are more forgiving. And when women are more forgiving, they give you a second chance, but be honest, you know. Or the other thing is that women are better networkers, because women's friendships are more deep and lasting.
Yes.
And when a woman recommends something to another woman, it's something very solid. So imagine the positive impact a business will have by marketing to women in the right way, you know?
Yeah.
Some of the stuff that I write about.
That's really good stuff, because you're not going on the shallow, insignificant things. You're really going deep and trying to find their emotional connection. That's really good. So
yeah.
You could really apply that then to any small business, like a lawnmower shop, or right through to a multinational where you know your customer base very, very well, and you know that your customer is a woman of, let's say, demographic of 25, or and she thinks this way. I suppose you could really use that to your advantage.
Thank you for saying that, for observing that, David. In fact, the book is applicable to anybody, whether somebody's working in a large business or somebody owning or running a small business or managing a small business. But the only reason I positioned the book as though it is for small businesses is that there are many umpteen books, thousands of books, business books written for large businesses, you know, and they can afford this battery of consultants and so forth. So I thought that's why I positioned the book and took a small businesses angle to do this.
Yeah, well, it makes more sense, I suppose, because firstly, people think on the smaller scale, then look up to the trustworthy people once they've made a connection, I suppose. So if I'm a small business owner, and I'm wanting to step out and do something different, then the points in your book would obviously help me to move forward and start thinking outside the general box, or start thinking outside of the square in terms of if you've got a certain business and everyone else is doing this line of thought. Would your book help me to think about something slightly skewed or slightly different that I could offer the customer base in a different angle?
Indeed it will. Because none of us, you know, most small businesses, you know, I have utmost respect for them. You know, they put capital, risk capital, employ people, and day in and day out work very hard to make the business succeed, you know. So I don't mean just to belittle what they're already doing, and many of them might already be doing many things, you know, for example, but just some insights there that you might not have. For example, the stuff I talked about hiring and emotional intelligence, most people don't really think about that. The second, or for example, you know, who thinks about an exit when you're starting a business, you know? It seems paradoxical. Or for example, the thing that I talked to you about, you know, enticing and tempting your customers to sin, you know? The seven cardinal sins, you know?
Yeah.
When you look at your proposition, you know, or when you're promotion, you can ask yourself, well, how do I address the sloth of a person? Or how do I address the greed? How do I address the lust part of that, you know?
Yes.
What can I do, you know? Does it cover that? Or, for example, when I talked about engaging in a price war, and there are other topics like how do you do direct marketing, you know? Or why averages don't mean anything? Or, you know, why processes, procedures, and policies matter, you know?
Yes.
Stuff like that, you know? So the book, you don't have to read from beginning to end. You can pick a chapter that's most appropriate for them. That's why I call it the playbook. And, you know, I don't make it boring. It's not just all wordy. It's bulleted, you know, with frameworks and models and diagrams of every chapter.
Well, it sounds more like a roadmap for someone who wants to find success.
I hope so. You know, that's my hope, or that was my hope when I wrote the book.
John, this is really good stuff. If you don't mind holding on, we're just going to take a really short commercial break, and we'll be back in seconds.
Stuck in a rut with your business venture or position at work? You now have the opportunity to break through that invisible barrier that is somewhat holding you back. Implement this proven laws of success with the Absolute Master Teacher. Watch your level of success skyrocket in a matter of days. Simply go to mywealthyweb.com/the-laws. That's mywealthyweb.com/THELAWS. And download your copy today. This is one decision that you will be truly thankful for. That's mywealthyweb.com/the-laws.
Welcome back, everybody. We're with John Lincoln from Connecting the Dots, and we are talking about some great entrepreneurial tips and business tips that you can move forward immediately with your business to accelerate it and really get a different angle so you can stand out amongst the crowd. Okay, so generally, if I could sum up what you were trying to say about your success and failure, especially in Japan, and how you have used that to your advantage, I heard a saying a fair while ago that is, in business, plan to fail and plan to fail fast, because the more you fail, the quicker you get to success overall. So you've obviously used that right through your motto as well, because you've moved forward from that point of view.
Yes, absolutely. I agree with you, David. And it's not easy for many people, you know, especially, you know, when you pour your heart out to a business, everything else freezes in your life.
Yeah.
And suddenly when you have to shut it out and move on, it's not easy. And I think you said it correctly, because most small business owners are emotionally connected to the business that they don't let go, you know, so probably it might be very wise for them. They don't let go till the very last minute when they had to, when the cash runs dry, you know.
Yeah.
That might not be smart, but at the same time, to be fair, there are people who held on to it and eventually made it, you know. But business is a whitewater environment, but what they would have to change, the business models, the commercial models would have to be changed. So if you say you quit and move, it doesn't mean you quit. Maybe you modify and move on, you know.
Yes.
You still want to do it.
Yeah.
That's probably more appropriate.
Okay, well, that makes a lot of sense, actually. Here's a pointed question, I suppose, that what advice would you give to someone, a young entrepreneur now, who has got this brilliant idea, whatever it might be, and they want to just go jump into the pool and start swimming, so to speak? How would you differ that from someone who's already got an existing business and they want to find out what they're sort of doing wrong? And does that make sense?
Yeah, I understood what you meant. That's an excellent question, David. And I should have addressed that in my book, and specifically of the way you framed the question. So that for a young entrepreneur who is just coming on board, I would ask, the first thing is that I would ask that person, because I don't think most people think in this term, you know, what is the incremental value proposition you're bringing to the market vis-a-vis your competition? Because almost certainly most, 99% of small businesses that start up do not have an intellectual property that nobody else has, do not have that, you know?
Yeah.
So given that, this is the incremental differentiation of value proposition that you bring to the market. You know, if you're planning a retail outlet or if you're planning to, you know, a technology company, you know, what is that one thing that differentiates you? That's one thing that you really got to be certain. And is it imitable? Is it, can somebody copy it very quickly, you know?
Like a USP?
Yes, absolutely. Like But the unique selling proposition is normally a word that's often abused and people don't internalize it properly.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you can put three words and say, this is my unique selling proposition, but it's not truly unique in the sense, you know.
Right.
And there's a checklist, you know, to check the uniqueness of the value proposition. The second thing is that, you know, you need to, you know, cash is king. You know, so first and foremost, you need to have the planning to get the cash.
Yeah.
That, you know, I always say plan, you know, nothing else matters. You need to plan all contingencies. Yeah. The third thing is that once you have the plan, you need to know your sources of funding.
Yeah.
You know, and then the last but not least, always keep in mind cash is king. So if many small investors, and especially the youngsters, they think their business is valued millions of dollars, but the expected value of that millions of dollars because of the low probability of execution might mean nothing, and they hold on to their shares and don't give equity to others, you know.
Yes.
You know, many people make sort of mistakes, and that's what they need to be aware. Cash is king. How can it take you to the next level, you know?
Yeah.
So this is some of the things I would tell to a young would-be entrepreneur. For a person who has an established business, I would encourage them to look at, for me, I think people make the difference. People truly are assets, and it's not just a phrase that people use it very commonly in large corporations. In a small business, people do matter. And the leaders and managers do matter because, you know, if you have a bad leader, you know, the vicious cycle sets in. You know, it passes on to employees, it affects your customers, it affects your bottom line.
Yeah.
Think about those things. The other thing that I would encourage them is to think about simple things like, you know, policies and procedures and stuff that nobody really, small businesses are not really good at. You know, they take it for granted. Or the other thing that I would encourage them to think about is not look at the existing proposition. You know, look at it from the customer journey, you know. You know, people just look at it as a product, you know, the traditional marketing product. There is a product, there's a price, there's a, you know, there's a promotion, and I go and sell it. That's a traditional marketing view.
Yeah.
But the words are different. Now, the proposition truly is the experience. It is the customer journey from the time the customer, how does the customer get to know your product? How does the customer walk in to buy? What's the experience? How does the customer uses your product or service? And how does the customer pay for it? You know, the end-to-end experience. And I use my experience walking into an Apple store in Walnut Creek in California as the way to sort of bring this out live, you know?
It really sounds like it's not really about the product then. It's really about the end-user solution and a solution to their problem.
Yes, indeed. It is the experience that across the customer journey through your business.
Yeah. Well, that makes so much sense. It really does. And I can certainly look around and look at the ones around certainly our area that are doing that correctly, because they are always flourishing, and even in a really tough market, that they always seem to be leaping forward and moving forward because they have made it about the customer and keeping them happy.
Absolutely. You know, that's why I said the two things, you know. The first thing is that they're doing something that is differentiated from their competition. The second thing is that they looked at their proposition in totality.
Yep.
You know, and, you know, so that includes the customer experience, that the customers keep coming back, you know,
yep.
And it's a virtual cycle, you know, that you've got to accentuate that further, you know.
Well, that's very good advice. So is there something that we could leave our listeners with in terms of what would you say to a young entrepreneur who is gung-ho about starting something, but we probably believe he's going way too fast? What would be the main ingredient which he is lacking because he's going too fast?
Yeah, first and foremost, you know, I would commend him that he or she for taking that risk to embark on something. And but I think it would probably behoove him to him or her to really plan. Planning is one thing that's really critical. You know, ask the question, you know, don't do it in an opportunistic way, because it'll be very short-lived and it'll be very painful. So I would advise somebody to plan, and think about the incremental value proposition you're adding to the market. You know, it's very critical. What is the differentiation? You know, the true differentiation. Of course, you can't just do differentiation on technology. It is limited, you know. That scope is limited. On service industry, or retail industry, you know, trading, and whatever you do, you know, how are you differentiating? You know, what's that unique selling proposition that you have?
Yes.
It's a question that people need to ask, you know.
Okay. Well, that's really good, actually, because it really shows that planning is probably the most important thing, and then secondly, ask as many questions as you can from the customer point of view. That's really, really good.
Yes. And most people who start businesses, David, they don't want to hear the naysayers around them, because that is very understandable.
Yes.
But you know, when they do it forcefully on a multi-scenario setting, with a multi-scenario setting, a strategy setting view, they should sort of brainstorm and plan, get people to play the devil's advocate against the idea, you know?
Yes.
So they can sort of design and craft the proposition better.
Yes.
That would be my advice for them.
Okay, so finally, what are your thoughts on mentors? If you get a good mentor to help you do this or do that? Someone to look up
that's
to.
That's a great question, David. The reason why I say, you know, it's not a simple question as meets the eye, you know. Mentoring in the traditional sense is a great idea for young startups, and in fact for many startups. But in my opinion, what startups really need is access to business. You know, most large companies that are buyers of small business services and products do not buy from small businesses because they don't have the credibility or the financial standing. So they should get mentors who can give them access to business.
Right.
More than addressing on advising how to run the business, because it's very easy to just, you know, it's always good to get advice, you know, and there is some value, there's always a lot of value to that, but it's much higher value that a mentor can bring to a startup by providing access to business.
Well, that makes so much sense, actually. It really does. Well, thank you so much for sharing that wealth of knowledge. It's really, really opened my eyes as well, actually. So where can we actually find your book and grab a copy?
Thanks, David. I really enjoyed speaking to you. The book is available in online on Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble. I believe it's also available on Sony e-reader.
Yep.
And, you know, the Connect the Dots is a very famous and a commonly used term for kids' playbook. So you might want to put Connect the Dots plus John Lincoln when you're searching for the book. So that's the book, and I hope your readers, your listeners will enjoy this.
Oh, no doubt they will. No doubt they will. It sounds like it is certainly a roadmap to success, especially for anyone in business, whether you're starting up or whether you've got an existing business. It's really good, actually. Well, what I might do, I might put a link on the website here, so people can just find it that way. It'll be a lot easier. I really appreciate you joining us today, John. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, David, for your time. I really enjoyed my interview with you, and hope to speak to you soon.
Yeah, thank you very much. So if anyone does want to get in contact with John, I'm sure there'll be other details on the book. Firstly, go and grab your copy, and we'll go from there. Well, thank you very much for listening, everybody. It's David Cummings from Business Video Marketing Strategies, and I appreciate you listening. Thank you very much, John. I appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Cheers.
Bye-bye then. Thanks very much.